Exception number 7328, rule number 5.
Cuddle Young, rule 5.
How far did you actually follow the Italians up before you were called back?
I suppose about 20 miles, the commando. And after that, we couldn't keep up, really, because we were sort of crashing along through the bush on either side, and the main body was going along this road as soon as the mines and things could be cleared away.
Were they on foot, or were they in motor transport?
Mostly on foot, I think. At least the fighting part of it is, but their supplies and things were coming up behind in MT.
And you didn't see anything of the Italians?
No. We didn't personally see them at all after the initial breakaway, as you might say. I don't think 9 Brigade did either. In fact, I think after they'd gone about 50 miles or so towards Gondar, they just stopped and sat there.
Did you get any impression of the quality and performance of the Italian troops opposing you when you were engaged in patrols against the Italians?
I should think they were, if their officers survived, they were probably quite good. They weren't as good as the Indian Army troops by a long chalk, but of course then they're not necessarily an army, a military nation, the Abyssinians, whereas of course the Punjabis and so on very much are.
I presume also the Punjabis would have had more professional experience than the...
I think so, yes. Yes, and of course they're better officers.
What did your men think of the Italian troops opposing them?
Oh, I thought they... I think they respected them fairly well. But they were all native, of course. I mean, the vast majority of them, and I don't suppose they'd have been able, any that had been taken prisoner, would hardly have been able to communicate at all.
Did you see any Italian prisoners of war, or native Italian
prisoners? A few, yes. Yes. They seemed I was going to say downhearted, but then anybody who's been taken a prisoner of war looks pretty downhearted, as I know.
What about their physical condition?
Oh, that was all right. They didn't look at all, no starvation side or anything like that. Nothing like it.
What about their tactics when they were actually patrolling? Were they similar to your own, or did they have any...
I don't think they tried to, actually. I think they just sat there and let us come. And when we came too near, they opened fire.
So they didn't patrol between...
No, I don't think our chaps expected any.
So when you did meet the enemy, it was in their fixed outposts?
That's right, yes. Which, after all, got known after a bit. And that's really how their sort of position, I suppose, was built up on the brigade headquarters map.
But you didn't attempt to assault any of the outposts?
I don't think so. I think if you went too close and were fired on, you'd said, all right, well, we can't go in on that path, we'll have to try that one next door, or this one.
Sounds as though your activity was rather like extended training in field craft with live fire.
With live, exactly, yes, I think it was, very largely. Mm.
Do you think it was a beneficial process?
Very, I thought, provided you didn't lose many men, and we didn't. Not that I was deliberately trying to save men, but that was in fact the thing. The sickness took, as I say, most of them. And we learnt enough lessons in self-defence and that sort of thing to be of great value when we came to fight a real battle.
When you were on this sort of patrol through the sort of vegetation you've described, how far could you normally see?
Um, Oh, well, in daylight you could see quite a long way, 20, 30 yards, not by eyesight, but you'd see the... If you couldn't see your chap, you'd see the grass moving where he was. But at night it was... just as much as you could see his... keep his helmet in sight. If you could do that at 5 yards, probably.
And if you're looking for the enemy, I mean, something like that...
Well, much the same sort of thing happens. I mean, you wouldn't find him... if you were looking for the enemy and he was coming towards you, you'd hear him long before you saw him, actually. Unless he was extra special, like a cheetah or something like that.
So ears are more important than eyes?
Yes, at that time of night, yes, indeed.
How are you actually withdrawn from that front?
Well, we were told to that we were going to be withdrawn, and given the option, as far as I remember, of just getting back to our base camp where we'd started from and having a day's rest and starting off a few days later, and because the brigade didn't think they could get transport enough to lift us back before, and I thought, as I remarked once before, it'd be a good thing to try and march all the way back to Railhead and see if we could just do it in reasonable time. And so we did in fact start off the day after we'd been told to go, so to speak, and as I say, it took us 3 days. Was it six? Yes, that's right. We used to do 5 hours in the morning from about 4:30 to 9:30, that sort of time. And then we started again at about 3:00 and marched till when the sun was past its peak and starting to go down a bit. And we marched till 8:00, another 5 hours. So 10 hours marching altogether. And... each spasm was 15 miles, about, give or take half a mile.
Were you actually marching? Did you march 50 minutes and then stop for 10?
Yep.
How much kit were you carrying when you were on this march?
We were in battle order, called fighting order. Let's say you had your rifle, bayonet, and as many slugs of ammunition as you could carry. We try and get on about 70 on each chap. Then you had your haversack, which had your shaving kit and first field dressing and that sort of thing in it. And if there was going to be a ration on the way, you'd have it in your sandwich or something. And that was all.
What about the large pack?
No, that with your overcoat and stuff, we got taken. So, I mean, you wouldn't go into battle with that. We reckoned that your marching thing ought to be your fighting order, as you might say, which you could use for the rest of the day and still be alive at the end of it, more or less.
So the large packs went on transport?
Yes, yes. We got those and each company in the commando was given 2 3-ton lorries, I think. That's right, yes, we had 6 altogether. And they put in a blanket for each chap and his pack, which is the big thing that goes in his back, and all the cooking vessels and extra rations and things like that.
How did you get on this march? Did you have any falling out with bad feet or other difficulties?
I should think extraordinarily few. I marched all the way myself. I had a bet with the RSM, actually. I was very tired, but at least fairly tired, but still capable of going on. And I think we only lost about a couple of chaps. But mind you, we been flogging about in the bush for a couple of months, and the chap's feet were pretty hard by that time. I know mine were.
And then what happened when you got to Railhead?
Well, Railhead, we stayed there for about a week, and then we moved up to Cassler, which the Italians had evacuated about the same time as they went back from Galabat, I think. And some doubt as to whether we were to go on to Keren and so on into Eritrea. But then 51 Commando just arrived in Gadarif. We arrived just as they did, actually, and I met them there for the first time. And they were at full strength, and of course they'd seen a certain amount of active service and so on, and so they went off straight away, and we hung about at Kassler for, as far as I can remember, about a week. They decided whether we were to go on or come back, and as we had lost about a quarter of our strength already, I think they thought it better if we went back to Egypt and tried to reorganize and get some more men and so on, which is what we did. We went by train to Wadi Halfa and then got on a river steamer and then went up bit further, and then finally got on another steamer, Luxor, I think. Yeah.
What was the overall effect of this experience on the Galabat sector, on your commando?
Overall?
Yes.
Overall what?
Effect.
Very little, I should say, as far as the enemy was concerned, because they were not very keen to attack parts of our position, and we were not able to attack parts of them. The forward troops were able to do so because they were just in contact like that. But they couldn't get very far because they knew that once, if they did start a serious advance, down would come the Italian Air Force and we would just be bombed. We had to go back either that or stop where we were. And so the sort of main purpose, as you might say, of the time we were there was really just to be as much of a nuisance to the Italian forces opposite, which were superior, of course, in numbers to the Indian Army Brigade, not counting all the airplanes they had, and just to make out that we were likely to be either make a forward move or stay there as long as we wanted to.
What about the effect upon your own men? Did it have a beneficial effect, this experience?
Oh, I think so. Taken as a whole, it certainly did. Because when they got back to Egypt, a lot of them had never been on service before. Nor had I. Well, not properly. They all thought, well, we've been chaps have been shooting at us and that sort of thing, and we shot back, you know. I mean, you sort of feel you've really started as a soldier then.
So they got more confident.
Oh, yes, rather. And you got to know who were the really good chaps and who were the not so good, you know. Not I personally, but, I mean, the NCOs and company officers did. And once you know that, your value as a company commander or as a platoon commander goes up by about 50% because you know exactly who to use in any particular situation.
Do you think there are any general lessons to be learned from the particular campaign?
Yes. If you're going to achieve really impressive results, as distinct from providing just a nuisance value or covering a sort of defensive sector, you must have freedom of action. You can only get that by two things. One is having sufficient transport to carry you a reasonably striking distance from your base. And that can be either animals or porters, I suppose, or mechanical transport if you've got any roads to go on. You can't, if you've got air superiority or anyway air equality, you can get over that by having airdrops of the things you want at various intervals. But apart from that, you must have some sort of transport you can get about in. And the other thing is that you must have adequate communications, because you launch people out into the blue, and if they can't be got in touch with, you can't control them at all, and they can't ask for help if they need it. And unless they are following one obvious route and they can't get off it, you've lost them, and they have lost you, lost their headquarters. So I think those are the two main things that absolutely stuck out a mile after the Gallabat campaign. Communications, at least transport, first of all, queue transport. I mean, the fighting transport, right? You can do it on your feet, more or less, but you must have something for your supplies and ammunition and stuff, and then you must have some means of communicating while you're on the move.
When you were conducting your intensive program of small-scale patrols, how did you actually organise things so they didn't get in each other's way?
Well, there were three infantry battalions in this brigade, more or less in line one with another, and I allotted one of my companies, which we had three, to each battalion area, and told them that when given a task to make contact with the battalion whose officers and so on, they should acquaint themselves with as soon as possible, and plan with them how to get out of their area forwards and how to come back. And they would then be well aware of what you were going to do and how to look out for you on the way back. And that seemed to work quite well. Any larger scale raid, of course, when we tried to get right round the Italian position, I would take charge of myself or the second command. But control was always extremely difficult in those cases when we were out in the blue, as you might say, owing to lack of proper equipment. If we'd had reasonable wireless sets and things, have been comparatively simple.
But would it be fair to say that as far as the small patrol was concerned, you didn't concern yourself with the details?
No.
You laid down the general principles and let the... get on with it.
If I could find a reasonable objective through brigade headquarters as to some particular point they or the particular battalion wanted examining, I would tell the commando company commander and say, make that your next target and bring back what you can on it.
How far would a patrol actually go when it went out overnight?
Oh, I should think you could do up to about 3 miles there and 3 miles back, allowing you've got to move entirely in darkness, and you're moving in through country that you don't know at all. I mean, knew pretty well where the forward defended localities were, and you could guess from that. I suppose the Italians did just the same for us, where the battalion headquarters were and that sort of thing. And then you had to find your way round all these things in the dark if you were wanting to get at a place that you hadn't heard of before, that you were trying to make for and so on. And that had simply to be done by your own mother wit and training.
Trial and error.
Trial and error, yes. And if you were unlucky, you'd rouse people up and you'd have to call the thing off, probably, or move off to some flank or another. But you couldn't in a country like that, like you can in a civilized country, give a map reference and a route and everything else and say, look, okay, you've got to get at that place by such and such a time and you'll find so-and-so there and you'll attack it. I mean, you just literally launched chaps into the blue and said, well, this is the area and I think what we want is 2 miles in, somewhere about there. Go and find it and see what it is.